WISE Awards are back for 2024 and early bird entries are still open. These awards recognise the best use of digital media, marketing and commerce, and they also celebrate innovation and expertise right across the digital marketing industry. There are more categories than ever before to enter, so visit exchangewire.com/events to find out more. The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's Mad Tech Podcast, diving into the worlds of media and marketing. I'm your host, John Still. I'm delighted to be back in the hot seat this week. And I'm thrilled to be joined by my colleague, Lindsay Rountree. Lindsay, welcome back.
I feel like I've been on this quite a lot recently. People are probably getting bored of my voice.
I know. Well, we'll...
I'm bored of my voice.
We'll try and replace you for next week.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Maybe with Dot.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. I was going to bring attention to Dot for later.
Brilliant.
Bring Dot in for the actual MadTech podcast. Yes, that is Dot, who is the host of our MadTech Daily, which you've seen pop up in your MadTech podcast feed recently. She brings you the news of the day in 2 minutes. Worth a listen. She will be popping up on your feed whenever. So back to the human-hosted podcast. And our special guest this week is consulting director at Behave, Total Media's behavioral science arm, Leah Karam. Leah, very warm welcome to the MadTech podcast.
Thank you for having me, John and Linda. I'm happy you're here too, so you can stick around.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, thank you very much. Leah is happy I'm here. Nice.
Well, yeah, great to have you. Thank you very much for joining us both. And let's dive into our big stories of the week. The first story is more EU legal wranglings, and this time it's Meta's ad tracking business that could be facing further investigation from the EU. The region's privacy laws are limiting how long people's data can be used for targeted advertising, which will affect Meta, as its ad tracking business model relies on vast amounts of data, which builds profiles of individuals. Lindsay, I'm going to, you know, we're hearing a lot, and we'll later in the pod as well, about EU regulations at the moment. So I'm going to come with a wider question to start with, which is, how likely is the advertising ecosystem to look different in the coming years as a result of all this EU regulation?
I think that, we're in a world where it is changing all the time. And a lot of it we might not even be aware of, because if you just look for a second at the number of fines that have been levelled by the EU over the kind of past 5 years, GDPR related fines, they are ongoing and they are consistent and they should be much bigger than they are, but it is what it is. So I think that there's going to be a lot more than that. What I think was interesting about this the article, which it was on TechCrunch, like it called out Facebook and Meta, because obviously they keep data and just keep it and keep it and keep it and keep using it and keep using it and keep using it and don't ever delete it. And they have, I think, previously said that they don't really have any kind of guardrails or barriers to how data is kind of got like gradually deprecated or got rid of. And it, you know, data from me kind of back in my first Facebook profile back in whatever year that was, they probably still have all that information on me and they're probably still using it to their advantage. But it's interesting it calls out just Facebook, because this will affect other tech companies too. But specifically it calls out Facebook, I think, because of the Max Schrems connection, the guy who Rachel, I remember this fondly all the time, once referred to him as Mark Shrooms in a podcast. And I don't know why, I just remember that and chuckle to myself every now and then. And Rachel's across the office laughing at this right now. But Mark Shrooms, as he is otherwise known, his beef is mostly with Facebook. So that's kind of, I guess, why the Facebook angle is being really, really heavily targeted. But it does affect ad tech, and these kind of things will continue to affect ad tech. And it's the right approach. I don't know whether this advisor that's gone to the EU and said, listen, there needs to be a policy about how long data is kept for will actually come to anything. But the fact that the conversation's ongoing and it's mounting and building and there's more people getting involved with the conversation and the momentum is growing, I think it will change what everything looks like. Because, you know, that plus everything happening with deprecation, which also is related to data privacy and data policy, it's all going to eventually come to a head where it's going to look very, very different in 5 years' time.
Yeah, I mean, without exaggeration, there's not a week going by at the moment without us hearing about more cases being brought by the EU. Yeah, the Digital Markets Act's really starting to bear teeth at the moment. Leah, how do you see this affecting the ad tech industry, the advertising industry in general?
So I completely agree with that. So obviously things change, I mean, every single day now. So again, which is why, I mean, it's really important for everyone and every company, every advertiser, heavy regulator as well, to be quite agile because things keep changing. It's like our industry is a constant learning curve. So that's quite interesting to see and to know, you know, in 5 years' time, nothing's going to be the same. Now, the way I see it moving is, you know, at the end of the day, like, we all want value in our lives. And the reason why people are being targeted with obviously things that they've been engaging with, their interest profiles, even, you know, things that are quite tricky to get into, like sexual orientation, which was obviously the issue with shrooms.
You're
now
gonna say Mark Shrooms, aren't you? You can't help it. You just can't help it.
Yeah, I just it's done now. It's like,
if Max ever hears about this, I'm sure he doesn't listen, but if Max Shrooms ever hears about this, we're really sorry that we're, you're now known, sorry, as Mark Shrooms across the industry.
Yeah, but essentially, like, those are, like, as you mentioned, those are literally like snippets and data points and signals that they've accumulated over the past 20 years or so, you know, within the sector in general. It's not just Meta, you know, it's a lot of different platforms that are actually capitalizing on that. But the thing is, at the end of the day, like, from a consumer background, like, people want value, you know, because there's a lot of noise out there, especially now there's content overload out there from different arenas. It's not just in terms of ads, you know, it's generic, it's also organic content. People want ways to find what they want, find what they need. So at the end of the day, what Meta's doing and other companies, what they're doing is trying to get there, to give them value, to give them things that they resonate with and to add to that. Now, the problem with that though is that they're using things that they shouldn't be using, in the sense that someone didn't really consent to have their information shared, but because we're so used to giving out our data, we think that, you know, we call that sunk costs. You know, we gave the data already, that's done. I've done it. You know what? They've got it. Let me keep giving it. So they're capitalizing on that. So the way it's going to change is it's going to keep being regulated because consumers are going to want value. But the problem is they're also going to keep giving their data away. And again, like advertisers are going to keep trying to reach those consumers because they want to connect with them and find those signals. And then Meta is going to find loopholes, and not just Meta, other companies, they're going to find loopholes and ways to say, hey, like, actually, if we actually offer a subscription-like model, for example, like they did, you know, when they said, hey, we're going to offer a paid version. So indirectly, like, consumers actually consent if they go and stay with the free version to have their ads. So again, it's going to keep being a learning curve. It's going to keep being an ecosystem where, on one hand, you want to find what you want because it's a constant flow of information that's happening out there. And advertisers have the power at the moment to kind of reach those consumers. And then, hey, who can answer that? Meta and different platforms, because they've got the data at hand. So I think it's going to keep being a constant battle between regulators and obviously those platforms. But there are many ethical ways, though, to find consumers, to get the signals out there. And I think there needs to be a better, obviously, like, collaboration and discussion around how that can happen in ways where you could actually isolate signals and get them ethically and aggregate consumer insights and understand profiles without actually being that invasive. So hopefully we'll use more behavioral insights. I'm not biased, but moving forward.
No, of course not.
No, but there's a lot to pick up on in there, I think, and some really interesting points. One of the big ones is whether this teeth baring from the industry in terms of regulation, is this consumer driven? Is this for the benefit of the consumer? Is this to the benefit of smaller advertisers? Are we just taking on the monopolistic platforms? Or is this, where's the interest line? How can it really help smaller advertisers or consumers, Lindsay? What do you think?
I mean, I don't necessarily think, I mean, obviously, ostensibly, for, you know, outwardly facing, this is obviously all for the consumers. This is to protect our rights, to protect our data privacy, and to ensure that we know what we're going into. The flip side of that is most consumers still don't know any of this is happening or have no idea how any of it works. And I think that's what makes things complicated. There is still such a lack of education that the man on the street, the woman on the street, will not understand exactly what's being fought for and what their consumer rights are and what privacy is.
Completely. Like, my mom called me the other day and she was like, I was thinking about something and then that popped out. Like, what? I was like, I don't know all the answers. Like, she's like, and then she wanted to have a conversation with my grandma as well, because my grandma was freaked out, because my grandma's on Instagram. She's a cool grand, but like, she was freaked out because, like, she was also thinking about something 2 days before. Again, I'm like, there's no answer to that, because as you say, Lindsay, like, consumers, like, we're consumers, right? Like, we might know a bit better because we're in the sector and we work within certain, like, sectors and areas, but most consumers actually don't know how their data is being used. And on many levels, but I think at the moment there's this kind of rise in obviously like new platforms that, you know, educate people, like give them visibility, especially the younger generation. When you look at Gen Z, like they're trying to some extent to protect their privacy. That's why you see the rise of public private social media. You know them best in their close-knit groups. Be Real, right? Finsta is on Insta. Snapchat, which Snapchat is booming at the moment. So really looking into that consumer base and that generation really gives you insights around, one, do consumers know what they're giving away? Your average consumer doesn't, but there's a rise of young people who are actually a bit more mindful. So I'm sure we're going to see a shift in how consumers are behaving with their data. Not now, maybe in the next 2-3 years, basically.
That's fascinating. I find generation so interesting. And I think that they are the kind of, you know, they're the ones that will shape what happens to data privacy. But I still think even for those younger generations that are kind of trying to be savvy about it, it's still overwhelming. I know what's happening to my data. Mm. Does it mean I do more to try and protect myself? No. Does it mean that I press decline or go through to select which trackers I'm happy to have track my data? No, I say accept to everything because it makes my life easier. And that's the problem. Like in this, like there's so many different directions. It's coming from everywhere about how we can protect the consumer's data, that we're making everybody be responsible, putting all these guardrails in place, and it makes it impossible to manage. So your average person can't manage it. And I know what's happening. I still can't be bothered to manage it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. That's why they don't know what to do in the sense that they don't know what means and how they can protect it with like those nuggets that come through. They're like, hey, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. So what they do is they do things that they can control consciously. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm going to shift the platforms I want to spend most of my time on. Hey, I'm going to shift the way I communicate with certain brands. Hey, I'm going to enjoy, like, I don't know, like a creator content, you know, creator economy of not influencers, creators, like it's booming at the moment, and they feel a bit more reassured when I connect with them. So the ways and the formats are shifting because of it, but then they still give their information away because they don't even know how to protect it at the end of the day.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm fascinated by your kind of thoughts on the sunk cost fallacy here.
Oh yes, saying that, I was like, I've never thought of that. Like, yeah. I've given it now. Sunk cost.
We all have, exactly. Like sunk cost is basically like anything that you've done that's already like anchored in the past. It could be a physical cost, a mental cost, a financial cost, a data cost, especially now. So yeah, we all gave that away. So essentially, everything that we do now, because we've got so many things that we already like put out, you know, we just don't want to like, we're like, hey, you know what, I've done that anyway, there's a sunk cost attached to it, might as well keep going.
Wow.
Yep.
No problem, Lindsay.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Well,
you enlighten me and scare me both at the same time, so thank you. Thank you, Leia. It's definitely a compliment.
Speaking of sunk costs, X.
Yeah, let's move to X now. Big topic.
So our next story, X has announced it will be arriving on the big screen with a dedicated TV app for videos uploaded to the social network. In a post, fittingly on X, CEO Linda Yaccarino wrote, "Soon we'll bring real-time engaging content to your smart TVs with the X TV app." This seems to be another step towards Elon's everything app that he's creating, waffling on about. But yeah, do you know, TV's a big area. We're hearing an awful lot across the industry about it at the moment. Leah, do you think X could become a big player in CTV?
That's a big question. I'm going to have to get a crystal ball or something. I mean, I can predict stuff, but that's far-fetched. So X, looking at it though, X has a very different core base and active base than any other platform. So it's used for news, business, opinions, you know, all those bits and pieces at the moment. The audience is also a bit older in the sense that like they're obviously quite, and if I were to look at it, I would say that they would obviously over index on traditional TV, but they're moving towards streaming at the moment. So I would say that if they're able to capture that core base and really hook them with, hey, a SpaceX launch, right? That's what they want to do, and announcement and exclusive insights around that, then it could work, but then that's quite niche. So I don't see them as becoming a big player in that unless they can crack and go beyond the core base. I know that they can obviously attract some advertisers initially at lower fees and lower prices to really put themselves in front of that main audience and main segment, but then scaling that, especially in a kind of streaming sector that's being a bit more like crowded at the moment. You know, even TikTok did that, and they've got, you know, TikTok on Samsung TV. It might be quite tough for them to crack that unless they actually have a big like master plan, which they might have, you know, knowing Elon Musk.
Maybe,
we don't know, to scale. So, yeah.
What do you think, Lindsay? Is this, you know, I mean, Linda Yaccarino with the Velvet Hammer, she's got her work cut out with X and making something of what it has become. Do you think CTV could be the way out?
I don't know. I think that Leia makes a really good point about, you know, X is kind of part of an older demographic that are just going to streaming now. If you're just getting into streaming, is an X app on a smart TV going to be the sort of streaming that you kind of have your first foray into? It's not the YouTube generation, where, you know, that is now CTV. Like we kind of tend to kind of not include YouTube in CTV, but we really bloody should. It's not a video platform. It is streaming as real as anything else. Like I don't use it, but I think I'm in a minority. Like I remember having a chat with Paul Gubbins about the fact that he uses YouTube, watches YouTube on his TV to watch his videos about how to reupholster his Land Rover. And I'm just like, what? Sorry, what? Like I didn't know everyone was using YouTube like this. He's like, but everyone is like, are you not? And I was like, no, really not. But people of our age are kind of starting to do that more, but people kind of in the generation above us really aren't. And they're kind of the ones that are also very active on X. And I just don't know if I see it working. And I don't know, like they're trying to pitch themselves as a video platform. Is there enough? TikTok is a video platform. TikTok is an exclusively video-led platform. Is there enough video content on X to be able to warrant it just being a place you can watch videos on? Does that not still require the context of everything else that happens on X rather than just the videos in isolation? Because the actual app itself, you know, is designed to kind of be a bit YouTube-esque, but YouTube is a purely video platform. X isn't, so I just don't know how we're going to get into that.
I think you've got a major point here. I completely agree. I mean, the first, there are two things I see from what you've just said. So the first thing on X, I don't know if you noticed, basically when you look through videos, there's something that's called below that, I think it's called, not, I'm paraphrasing here, but like readers comments or verification comments. So, because sometimes some of the videos that are posted actually not that accurate. So again, how would that actually come to life and how would they actually filter out, aggregate the content and get it there? That's the first point. The second point is like when you look at TikTok and video-based content, like something we're looking at in the industry at the moment is choice overload, essentially. Like there's a lot of content out there. There's content fatigue. Like, do people want more video-based content? We've seen video grow so much, but I come in and say like, okay, that's great, but it's the law of polarity. Whenever something grows a lot, like again, there's going to be like a drop, or people are going to feel overwhelmed. So do people want another video-based platform? And again, older people are now using TikTok. We're seeing people are using TikTok about 50, like again, not to mention a parent again, but like my parents like stay on TikTok for maybe 2 hours a night. You know, it's their new entertainment platform.
Wow.
But I don't see them venturing into X and looking at X content, especially that like there's so much out there and it's tough to filter out at the moment and to meaningfully interact with content. So that's also one of the reasons why I think they might not be able to crack it.
Do you both think, because I just opened X right now to see if I could see a video, but I realized I've got no idea how X works. So
I was like, is she bored? Is she looking at her phone?
I literally got my phone out. It's so rude. I was genuinely trying to look at X to see if I could find a video, and I could not find a video. Clearly, I'm not the right person to be talking about social media, so I have no bloody idea what's going on.
I can find one because, like, yeah.
Yeah, you get your phone out now, and you at bored while I chat away. I'm intrigued. Is like, do you think that the timing of them announcing this is kind of related to the timing of TikTok's announcement of potentially having to be sold or divested or whatever?
Yes.
They believe they can replace TikTok.
I think they've seen a potentially impending niche in the market that they would like to try and take advantage of.
We found a video.
It's a bunch of dogs.
It's all
like
being
fats. Yeah. All like being trained. Yeah, anyway, it's dog content. Obviously, people resonate with dog content.
Look,
so if they tap on dog content and just like, Lindsay would be hooked.
I'm
give
obsessed.
Me that stream,
That's
please.
What I need X for.
Yeah. I mean, it's the founding principle of Elon Musk's X. Is dogs. So
you know, people are like 40% more likely to engage with content there's a pet on it or a dog on it.
40%?
40%.
That's probably accurate for me.
Yeah.
Maybe even higher for me. Yeah.
But I mean, X has numerous issues that we talk about quite often on the podcast in terms of the brands that are involved in it. Brand safety is a massive issue for it, really. How can a video app do anything but exacerbate that, Lindy?
It will exacerbate it. I just, and it's, you know, one of you said earlier, like, oh, Elon Musk is, you know, is one of his grand plans for the kind of his master app and this kind of thing. I just don't think when it comes to X, I think he's got a blind side.
You think he doesn't have a plan?
No, he doesn't. Like, he's very smart and astute in kind of all his other business ventures. I don't have any respect for the man, but he genuinely is, I think. But when it comes to X, it's like his heart's overtaken his head and he just can't have a rational thought about it.
Exactly. Like, as a, again, from a behavioral science point of view, that's like, for like, it's, I think it's definitely the case, because like, he again invested like so much money anyway into it, and I think that he's obviously like has broader plans for, you know, like different for Tesla X, etc., SpaceX, etc. But like, at the moment, it feels like every single decision that he's made for X has been driven by gut or intuition or heart, not a business plan, which is a bit, I don't know, because sometimes the best leaders like obviously go by gut feel, but with him it feels like when it comes to X, it's one of the biggest platforms in the world, like he has to have a plan, you know, moving forward, because a lot of people out there have one. The platforms that he's competing with have plans. So it might work, it might not, but you know, he's his own brand and he's capitalizing on that. So, I mean, let's see where that takes us. But yeah, I'm excited to see where that's going to. I mean, we're going to listen to this again, maybe like a year, 2 years, and be like, hey, were we wrong or right?
This will not have aged well.
Like watching X on TTV.
Watching Elon Musk be unveiled as president on X TV.
Yeah. Well,
Elon's adventures in X will no doubt continue. And who among us hasn't spent $43 billion because we got a few likes from crypto bros? Cool. On to our final story, which is TikTok, always in the news. And TikTok have suspended TikTok Lite in the EU. The app was rewarding users for spending time on TikTok, and the European Commission has opened an investigation with thoughts about its addictive design potentially posing mental health risks for young people. Leia, do you think TikTok Lite was potentially dangerous, addictive?
I mean, for sure, because even if you take out, I mean, again, like, massive respect for TikTok, you know. Obviously, we worked with them at some point as well in terms of like developing the platform and all of that. They've created something amazing that gives people access to many things, you know, educates people. It's literally it's a new revolution, right? But I do think that some aspects of the app are very dopamine driven, even the app itself. So I wrote an article a while ago around how TikTok itself, even beyond the Lite app and the reward scheme on that app, is addictive. It creates what we call behavioral change, because there are three things that are happening at the same time that usually create behavioral change: motivation, ability, and trigger, that come to life at the same time, from the motivation to be entertained to the ability to do so on your phone to a community trigger, a rewards trigger, a UGC, something that happens, like UGC content that triggers you to do something, potentially being part of that ecosystem of wanting to learn more. There's always something on TikTok that hooks you to it as an app itself. The algorithmic based content is also a trigger, because it gives you what you want to see, basically, or what you think you want to see. So again, TikTok in itself has addictive elements already from a behavioral perspective. Now, looking at TikTok Lite and the reward scheme, that's taking it a step further, because it's like enabling that. It's giving out those, hey, you do that, that's positive reinforcement. As if I was about to ask someone to do something and then give them a cookie in return. That's like positive reinforcement. Hey, here's more chocolate, you know? Oh, here's a dog picture, you know? Like, those are dopamine hits that excite people. So 100%, like, it has every single scientific backup to it to make it addictive. And I think that's a major issue that's happening at the moment. That's why, obviously, it's threatened to be, one of the reasons why it's threatened to be banned in the US. But most of the things that we interact with have that dopamine hit at the moment. So one can argue that, you know, like you said about Meta, why Meta and not others? Why TikTok and not others?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I remember studies from a few years ago with the Facebook app and the Facebook feed and the pulling down and releasing to refresh content gave the same dopamine hit as pulling a roulette wheel. So it was very similar to the response and the rush you get from gambling. So yeah, nothing new, but very much intensified in terms of this literal have a present for using our app. Lindsay, do you think, how do you feel about the app and how the EU are positioned on it?
I mean, I think we've established that I know all about social media. I do have the TikTok app. I have forayed into it every now and then. Each time I do, a bit like your mum, I get addicted and realise I've been on it for 3 hours and then go, right, I'm deleting that because this is not...
You're going to call me now and say, oh, why am I seeing this content?
Yeah, I might just do that actually. Yeah, yeah. You need to be careful. Yeah. But I remember reading a book. I don't remember what it was called. It was like a business book, Yellow. In fact, I didn't read it because I got bored after a couple
of
paragraphs.
Clearly, it like made a big impact
on
you.
This is a really good anecdote, isn't it?
I'm aware of books.
So if you're listening to this and you're the author of a business...
A yellow book.
A yellow business book, then we're very sorry about that.
Oh my God, this is a terrible anecdote. But anyway, I must have read only a couple of chapters because I clearly didn't get any further. But the first chapter, I remember this anecdote from somebody else who this person was speaking to, where she... had become addicted to her pedometer, her step tracker,
to
the point where it got so bad that she, they would say, "Wait, congratulations, you've reached 10,000 steps. Just hit another 200 more, and you'll achieve mm-hmm. like elite mm-hmm. level." And so it got to the point; it got so bad where she was actually kind of going up and down the steps in her basement in like 4 o'clock in the morning to kind of get the next level of steps and get the next like kind of level of like you've hit this many floors in a day just to get like a smiley face and just to get like the next level reward. And she was like a woman in her 40s, and she's like a professor, and she's like, mm-hmm. "What's mm-hmm. happened to me? If I can be manipulated like this, mm-hmm. like how can the person who doesn't know what's happening to them, how is it affecting other people?" And just reading about the TikTok light thing made me think of that, because actually it's not, you're absolutely right. It's not just, why are we just calling out TikTok and TikTok light? Because these dopamine hits and these kind of like reward based systems appear in everyday life. I was playing solitaire last night because that's the only thing I do. And it was like, "Congratulations, you've reached this level, like solitaire legend, level 71. I'm like, "Oh great, if I play a few more games, I'll reach level 72. What does that mean in my life? It has absolutely no bearing, and it's like, it's nothing, but I still want to get to level 72. It's like, I've got problems. I mean, far beyond me playing solitaire, it seems. But I mean, it's literally everywhere. In every step we take, everything we look at, there is some kind of reward hit. So, you know, fine, call out TikTok because it's one of the worst, let's be honest, mm-hmm. but there's other, it happens everywhere.
Yeah, I suppose 100%. with TikTok Lite, it's not even masked. It's not even, you know, a leap to think of the dopamine, the reward. It's literally telling you.
At least they're trying. They're not trying to hide it.
No,
yeah,
so yeah, can, exactly. Because most of the time, they try to hide it. Exactly, the platforms. Yeah.
But no, I mean, I'm looking at my watch now, which has three nice, colourful rings. That if I fill them in the day, it gives me a ping and tells me I've done really well. And I'm, you know, it's lovely. Thank you, watch.
Yeah, I was with two people, and one of them went, "Oh, I've hit my ring today." I don't have an Apple Watch, so I had no idea what they're talking about. I went, "Who hit my ring today?" And somebody else went, "Oh, I must check if I hit my rings." And they were, it's like they became this big thing about hitting your rings. Like,
yeah. Well, we're seeing the growth as well of like fitness trackers, completely, but like fitness trackers, because basically like a lot of the things that we look at, you know, when we think about technology, and we looked at that in the past decade, were a positive shift. It's the first time that we're actually experiencing diminishing returns from technology. And this is something that we always need to think about. It's like, okay, when did it shift? Because it was great. We had new formats, we had new ways of getting information, but then, hey, like we've used it and overused it, and now there are like negative tech shifts that are happening. So for instance, it's good to talk about your health and obviously track your kind of biological self, your heart, etc. It encourages you to be a bit more fit, but at which expense, right? Like, why is it so addictive? It's because when you build a habit, actually, it takes 66 days to break it. So when you start doing what we call tiny habits like that, so essentially you start slow and then you track it, and then, hey, like you want to keep doing it, and then you keep doing it over a couple of days, and then that hooks you and it makes you want to do it a bit more. But now you have this tangible way of seeing it through a watch, through a tracker. So because of technology, so how can we actually fix that? How can we reduce dopamine hits? How can we get people to connect with each other? Like we're doing now, like we're talking, we're not talking at a screen, we're like talking to each other. So it's like just making sure that we find this again. But that's why I said in that article where I spoke about TikTok and the way the algorithm is built beyond the Lite app, the actual core TikTok app has dopamine hits. And the way I talked about it was, right? It's everywhere. But at the same time, you know, big tech has to step up to be a force for good, because it's really in their hands right now. It's the hands of very powerful people. And even us, you know, people that work within the sector, we've got a voice, we've got things to say, you know, we can change things. It's in our hands, basically. And we have to start doing something about it and changing the pace of things, because otherwise we're all going to look at our fitness trackers and not look at each other. Essentially,
I will admit to probably being fairly addicted to my fitness tracker. It's the first thing I look at in the morning, because I have a Whoop, which most people have never heard of. I'm being laughed at. So there you go. Most people have never heard of it. But it's not a watch; it's a band. So I don't. Okay. I'm not looking at a screen on my wrist the whole time. Yeah. But I am looking. It gives you like a strain target and like a stress. It tracks stress, and like you have to fill in a questionnaire in the morning, and it'll say like, "Did you see light first thing?" Wow. It's like it's quite intense, but you become addicted to that in to then see if, oh, because I had more sugar yesterday, has that affected how my strength? And it's very, very like, it's, I mean, I haven't probably admitted this to myself yet, but just talking it out loud now makes me realize
you're in deep
myself. So we're like
on therapy seats now, basically.
Yes, exactly.
No, but
I'm on the couch.
But it's really funny, because like I really never thought that we would actually like, again, have diminishing returns from fitness now. We all want to be healthy. We all want to track, you know, our diet and all of that. But like, we just need to make sure that we've got, and maybe it just could be something that can be added to the platforms and to the UX or UI or to the actual functionality of the platform, make you less addicted to it, get you to check them, but try to not give you so much that you have to make sure that you're actually ticking every box, you know? So I never thought we would actually experience diminishing returns from fitness apps, but we are. That's the reality of it. We are. So those platforms have to be a bit more, like, I'm not saying chill, because they're quite intense. I'm not humanizing them.
Be more chill.
But come on, they have to like, yeah, they have to just like, come on, take a deep breath and just like let you go with it, you know? Because again, it's the society we live in, though. That's the thing. Like, how can we change it if there are already sunk costs and things that we've done to get us here? We need to do a podcast on sunk costs, but like, there are so many things that got us to where we are. And it's like, okay, it's going to be so hard to break away from them, unless there's a new age foundation that happens to change that and shift that. It needs to be a big push.
And I want to also point out that you've got your watch, your Apple Watch on. I'm actually wearing two. I've got an actual watch I don't really use anymore, but and then I've got my Whoop band that, you know, whatever. Leia has nothing. Leia has a very nice watch on her wrist, which does not tell her anything about her steps or her strain or anything else.
It's like a vintage watch. Yeah. And I'm like,
lovely.
Well, mine told me at 5 to 10 last night that I needed to do 200 more calories to hit my goal. And my response was, fuck you, I've been at work.
Go away, man. The thing is, I wore an Apple Watch. If you watch my last few videos, I wore an Apple Watch for a year and a half. I removed it, I think, during Christmas for a practical reason, because I was skiing and it was like bothering me. And then I came back to London and I was like, I'm not going to wear my Apple Watch. But I wore an Apple Watch for so long. And also I like designs and like shifting things. So maybe that was like also one of the reasons. But yeah, the thing is, yeah, I stopped wearing it. And the funny thing is, I got it from a friend. Like, he basically like sold it to me because he was like, I'm creeped out, I don't want it. And that's the irony of it. He's gonna listen to this and laugh. But he was like, also he works in finance and stuff, so he's not quite like, he's doesn't know much about like, I mean, he works in investment banking. It's not very anchored in our sector. He wants to learn more about it. And he's like, oh, I don't want it. But he's rare. Like, not everyone is like that. But I got it from him, basically. And that explains a lot. It's very ironic that I got what creeps him out now.
Well, you've been liberated from yours. And I hope that's a nice thing for you. I hope it continues to work well.
You're going to see me with one like tomorrow. You didn't stick by the plan.
I think we'll call it a day there. But thank you so much, Leia. That's been a really fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, brilliant conversation.
Yeah,
thank you.
That was really fun.
No, thank you very much, Lindsay. Thank you as always.
Likewise.
We will discover the name of this yellow book you've read two sentences.
I'm going to go and check out.
It's on a bookshelf in my house somewhere. Okay. So I will send it. Dig it out and let you know.
Excellent.
I wouldn't recommend it, obviously, as I didn't finish it. So
but those two sentences were gold.
Well, it stuck. The first chapter stuck with me, so I will say that for it.
Excellent. Well, thank you all so much for listening. And just another reminder, do listen to the Mad Take Daily, which is on your feed every day, and we will see you next week. Thank you.